Promise 33, three times. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness." 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness." 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness." 2 Corinthians 12:9. I'd imagine you already know the context of this promise as spoken to Paul, of his debilitating thorn in the flesh, probably some crippling physical ailment or injury, and his three times ask for God to remove it from his life and ministry. But instead, he receives the above. He receives, rather than what he immediately desired, precisely what the Lord desired, because the Lord is looking at the whole story as a whole. The entirety of human history, to him, is intelligible. And the part each of us play in his plan is perfectly suited to each of us. Paul, physically weak, unable to rely on the forcefulness of his own power and personality, was the instrument Jesus used almost more than any other. So, let's look at this promise for ourselves. What are the variables we would seem to bring to the table if we want to personally experience the same sort of life of usefulness that Paul lived? Well, here they are. There's three. Ability to listen and hear from Jesus. Remember, "but he said to me," is how it opened. Then willingness to conform unto a godly contentment. Remember, "my grace is sufficient for you." And then lastly, our acknowledgement and acceptance that we are in fact weak. "For my power is perfected in weakness." And just so you internalize this, everything I just said to you, all three of those Pauline requirements, are completely counterposed to the ways of the world you're living in. The world will think you're crazy for striving to hear words from a 2,000 years ago carpenter teacher. It will scoff at your almost stoic attempts to find peace in a simple, godly contentment. It will find nothing more reprehensible than a surrender unto acknowledgement of weakness, an acceptance that a greater heavenly power is thus activated. But, assuming you see the life of Paul following Jesus to be as thrilling as I do, let's take a look at the fruit that will be born from the Godward direction. He promises to personally speak to us. Again, "he said to me." He promises a grace that's greater than our stated or even unstated need. Again, "my grace is sufficient for you." He promises, in place of our weakness, dynamic experience of his powers perfecting right within ourselves. I'll read it again. "My power is perfected in weakness." In contemplating on so hearing him, finding peace in him, experiencing the joy of his promised power arriving, I've been reminded of one of my greatest heroes of belief. In fact, the whole idea of these writings was partially inspired by his own experience of looking for promises, holding them out to God, and then waiting upon his answer. This particular hero is George Mueller, the 19th century evangelist and director of miraculously provided for orphanages in Bristol, England. From the earliest dawn of his personal belief in Jesus, it was his desire to trust Jesus unreservedly for practical provision and finance. Mueller refused simply to ask any man. When he and his eventual thousands of orphans needed food, he just prayed and waited. And the results, always, year after year, for a lifetime, were hearing from the Lord, sufficiency from the Lord, and high, glorious experiences of the power of the Lord perfected in weakness. At some length, I want you to listen to what a friend of Mueller's, Arthur Pearson, wrote about his total attachment to the promises of God. Really listen, like this is beautiful. George Mueller stored up reasons for God's intervention. As he came upon promises, authorized declarations of God concerning himself, names and titles he had chosen to express and reveal his true nature and will, injunctions and invitations which gave to the believer a right to pray and boldness in supplication. As he saw all these, fortified and exemplified by the instances of prevailing prayer, he laid these arguments up in memory, and then on occasions of great need, brought them out and spread them before a prayer-hearing God. It is pathetically beautiful to follow this humble man of God into the secret place and there hear him pouring out his soul in these argumentative pleadings, as though he would so order his cause before God as to convince him that he must interpose to save his own name and word from dishonor. These were his orphans, for had he not declared himself the father of the fatherless? This was his work, for had he not called his servant to do his bidding? And what was that servant but an instrument that could neither fit itself nor use itself? And if this were God's work, was he not bound to care for his own work? And was not all this deliberately planned and carried on for his own glory? And would he suffer his own glory to be dimmed? Had not his own word been given and confirmed by his oath? And could God allow his promise, thus sworn, to be dishonored even in the least particular? Were not the half-believing church and the unbelieving world looking on to see how the living God would stand by his own unchanging assurance, and would he supply an argument for the skeptic and the scoffer? Would he not, must he not, rather put new proofs of his faithfulness in the mouths of his saints and furnish increasing arguments wherewith to silence the caviling tongue and put to shame the hesitating disciple? My friends, let us be totally unhesitating in listening for Jesus and his personal promises. Let us be totally believing in the joy of finding our life in him. Let us use this day, every minute of this day, to acknowledge and accept that the places of our weakness are the precise places we may wait upon his perfect strength. You are allowed to hold up his promises for even a righteous argumentation. You are meant to live on his promises and to live from them.